au suivant, au suivant.
So we're back. Back where we started. Delmar Highlands Shopping Center, drop-off loop. The black rental car peels out. Through the rear window, I can make out the back of this kid's head, flanked by two goons. My heart just sways.
Au suivant! Au suivant!
Tag, you're it. Another piece of teenage wildlife. And so, time for a sayonara, my beautiful boy.
Au suivant! Au suivant!
May the Grimace's flashlight run out of batteries. May he move out of intake and swiftly up through the units. May quarters bounce off your bedsheets like baby Joey's. And when the goons pounce, may they tread lightly upon your teenage frame.
Au suivant! Au suivant!
And when the ips come, may you find solace inside your beautiful mind. And as you exhaust the struggle and close your tired and soft eyes, may you begin to love the slope. Until one day, may you find yourself, quite possibly, enjoying a slice of cheese in a fine red coat. You keep a third eye open, for there shall always be an opening. Always is. And if you take it, just know, old 196, he'll be rooting for you.
Au suivant. Au suivant.
So yeah, after getting kicked out of Saratoga High, and then getting kicked out of Provo, I landed full circle, back at Saratoga High for spring semester, senior year. All thanks to Mom. You see, quite like me during my incarceration at Provo, she'd been secretly pouring her energies into reuniting me with the tribe. Yet, unlike me, who could never in like a thousand nights entertain the notion of anything worthwhile being associated with frickin' Hell's Ditch, Provo Canyon, dear old Mom surmised that Provo, you know, 'twas a school after all, had something of use. My transcripts. Copies of which she marched into Principal Rogowski's office. Now imagine Rogowski, like, cornered, you know, and dear old Mom, you know, demure, determined, you know, Scottish, you know, pleading my case, you know.
Jeffrey's paid his penance and atoned for his cavalier truancy. And did you know? He's even banked a 3.8 GPA high school credits. Transferable credits. Now, wouldn't it be something if he went on to graduate with his class this spring?
And dear old Mom, you know, the one who shan't be denied, triumphs. Good old Rogowski, you know, he goes for it. Yay! So thank you, Mom. You've always believed in me. And that's always made all the difference. I love you, Mom. And so, back in English, the class I cut to hang out with Matt, I'm like devouring this semester's reading assignment, which happens to be a little novel by Don Peace titled Cool Hand Luke. What do you know? Suddenly it's like, wow, core curriculum's no longer wearisome. Like, I can relate. So yeah, you know, like scholastically I'm engaged, but don't think it was all so easy. No. Never is. So, midterms, April. And for the past 3 months, I've been matriculated at Saratoga High as a full-fledged 18-year adult senior. And my status as an adult, you know, it affords me new privileges. You know, well, sorry, not privileges. You know, fucking rights, man, you know? Like I can now open a bank account. Cast a vote. Get drafted.
Sir, yes, sir!
Go to prison. No shit like that. Which are all awesome, you know? Well, the last two, maybe not so much. You know, I guess it turns out, like, adulthood comes with, you know, rights and duties, you know? What? Uncle Sam wants a tax return? Like, from little old me? But, so yeah, I mean, let's set all that aside for a second. At least until after graduation. But there was this one right, like, for which I developed, like, an insatiable sweet tooth. Like, the unscratchable itch. So it's like an 18-year-old adult, like I could cut class and, like, excuse myself. Like, I was like a made man. Like, I'd sign these excused absence slips and, like, it was like fucking printing my own, like, get-out-of-jail-free card. You know, like, feeling hotboxed in six-period current events? Bam! Want to test drive that flower vase you threw in ceramics? The one with the hole in the side? Bam! You know, I was like a fat kid alone with his birthday cake, you know? And so imagine, like, my surprise when Rogowski calls me to his office, where he lays it on me. He's like, Jeffrey, we're in April, and now you have 12 excused absences. And, like, immediately I start crowing, like, 12 perfectly legal absences, you know, like, waving my driver's license in his face, like, dude, check the date, man, you know, don't tread on me. And like, Rogowski, you know, he gets it, he's cool, you know, he allays my fears. He's like, Jeffrey, you know, settle down, like, I'm not here to expel you. You know, you can excuse yourself as much as you like. And I'm like, whew, my man. And he's like, yeah. No, I just called you in, you know, just to talk to you, to make sure you're aware that, you know, there is a limit to excused absences. After which, you know, I'm obliged to withdraw class credit. And I'm like, okay, so. And he's like, so you want to graduate with your class? And I'm like, yeah. He's like, well, Jeffrey, I can't let you walk without the requisite course credits, which I can't grant to you if your absences exceed 16. And you're already at 12. So there I am, you know, freaking out. It's like, fuck, man, like, again? Like, you've only been back for 3 months and you're already fucking this up? And then I get this idea, like, I don't know from where, but I'm like, hey, man, like, why don't we, like, create a contract? Like, where I'll sign over my rights as an adult to self-excuse, and then I can't cut class. And Rogowski's like, okay, you know, if you feel like that would help. And I'm like, dude, like, there is no other way. And so we did it, you know, we drafted a contract right there in his office. But, like, right before signing, I'm like, hang on, man. Like, can we make this thing expire, like, the week right after finals? And he's like, yeah, sure, you know, it's your contract. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, you know, I've still got those three absences, right? I kind of want to use them. And he's like, yes, I imagine you do, you know? And so with that little added bonus clause, we executed the contract, without which, you know, I would have never gotten through finals. But I did, you know, and then, you know, treated myself to those last three absences, you know, bringing my total right up to 15, just short of the 16, which qualified me to graduate with the tribe. Saratoga High, class of 85, staying alive. After graduating, yeah, I went on to have many, many crazy adventures. Spent 12 years traveling around Europe, you know, just me and my backpack and a 12-piece drum set. When the Berlin Wall fell, like, my gypsy soul wandered deep into Eastern Europe, where I lived out this crazy rock and roll fantasy. actually played drums for the very first Polish rapper. But, yeah, this is another story for another time. And so, yeah, you know, thank you for listening. You know, and typically after I recant my, you know, tale of woe, there's always two questions that everyone seems to ask. And the first is, like, do you think Provo changed you? And I'm not so sure that it did. I was certainly a different person than I was when I was first taken. You know, would that 16-year-old, like, pre-Provo Jow have pitched, you know, a contract to Rogowski voluntarily limiting his, like, personal freedoms? You know, yeah, hard to imagine. But hey, you know, the 18-year-old Jow did. That contract was quite possibly, like, my first responsible act as a fully-fledged 18-year-old adult. But, you know, thanks to some, you know, teen whisper at Provo... yeah, seems a bit of a stretch. And besides, like, I've gone on to make countless reckless decisions since. You know, the price of which I've had to beg, borrow, and steal to pay. So, yeah, did Provo change me? I don't know. I mean, perhaps that old adage, you know, once bitten, fuck you twice, is most aptly applied to the self. The second question I get is, what about your dad? Like, did you ever talk to him about Provo? Like, confront him? And the direct answer is no. You know, knowing my dad, you know, it would have never done any good, you know. He wasn't one to easily admit his shortcomings. So, yeah, no, we never talked about it. You know, and that was our dynamic, you know, which might seem like overly, I don't know, stoic or even like cowardly. But if you're willing, you know, I have another, like, more nuanced attitude that's perhaps best expressed, like, anecdotally.
The following is a true story. Except for...
All right. Enough of that. Last flashback, I swear. So, Del Mar, 1976, America's bicentennial, and the Folkert family is down on the Mud Flats, which is like a coastal inlet behind the Del Mar racetrack.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you.
Mom, she's walking next to Blitz, like our slow Shetland, who's harnessed to a cart, inside of which ride Bow and Wow. And me, I'm on Chum's back, and Dad's on Chad. Chad was like a new addition to the corral. Like, unlike Chum and Blitz, like our mellow, good-natured ponies, Chad was Dad's new toy. Like a horse, like a thoroughbred. You know, like a real equine muscle car. a muscle car that's like plodding along with the rest of us, you know, stuck in first gear. And Dad, he can't help himself. You know, he's just itching to see, you know, what's Chad got under the hood. Dad digs his heels into Chad's belly and the two of them tear off across the flats. And like suddenly I lurch backwards. And like in an instant, Chum tears off after them. Like something inside Chum's little Shetland brain must have snapped. Like some latent ancestral instinct awakened. But yeah, Chum... he wants to compete. Like, he wants to race. And now the two of us are at a full gallop. You know, I fumble the reins and I grab two fistfuls of mane and just hold on for dear life. And I remember just, like, yelling, like, Dad! Dad! And hearing my cries, my dad turns to see my ass bouncing in the air, like, clutching onto Chum's neck. And he whips Chad around and gives chase. And as he catches up, like, Chad overshoots us, which juices Chum's instincts to run even faster. And so Dad yanks on the reins, and Chad slips behind us, and then Dad cracks the reins, and Chad bursts past us, until he yanks on the reins again. And Dad was never able to get Chad alongside Chum, you know, to hopefully grab the reins, which I'd let go of like a quarter mile back. And all the while, like, Chum is fastly approaching the banks of the slough, which is like a little river inlet from the ocean. And I'm thinking, fuck, is Chum gonna try to jump this thing? You know, but there's no way. Like, the slough is like 30 feet wide. And at the last second, you know, Chum pulls up. And I just slide off and land on the bank next to the water. And I remember they're laying on my back, staring up at the sky, and Chad and my dad come into view. And we look at each other, and Dad just says, he's like, "Shit, Jeff." And we just burst out laughing. You know, as on that day, you know, so we were in life. Just never quite in sync. You know, not until years later after Provo and my, you know, rock and roll adventures in Eastern Europe. You know, until I was in my 40s, you know, Dad in his 60s, did we finally, you know, sync up and become, you know, good friends and really enjoy each other's company. So I try to take this little life lesson with me as I go along, you know. People aren't always in sync. But that's no reason to write someone off, you know. Just wait a bit, or a lot. And when it's time and you're back in sync, enjoy it. Because nothing lasts forever. Dear old Dad passed away a year and a half ago. I'm grateful for all the gifts he's given me. From a pretty badass back end back in the day, to a full head of hair at years young, for my first drum set. When Dad started doing Hearts Up in Santa Rosa, he operated on Charles Schulz, the cartoonist for Charlie Brown and Snoopy. And the two became like good friends. And so when you see in the Peanuts comic strips Snoopy dressed in surgical scrubs, you know, as the world's most famous heart surgeon, that's my dad. I miss him every day. I love you, Dad. We'll sync up again the next time around. So yeah, now having thus answered two of the most often posed questions that I get, I'd like to pose one of my own. I mean, my tale of woe, it's really centered around the question, like, you know, what to do with a kid named Zhao. And now you've heard what was done with a kid named Zhao. And it turns out the kid's all right. The kids are all right. The kids are all right. But this still leaves us with one last delinquent, the grand delinquent, which begs my question for anyone still listening. Namely, what to do about a school named Provo? So yeah, Provo, you know, it's become part of an industry. Some label it the troubled teen industry. And, hey, let's get Alice. Hey, Alice. Could you please take this one? Last one, I swear.
The troubled teen industry is a network of for-profit residential treatment centres, boot camps, wilderness programmes, and behaviour modification schools that claim to rehabilitate at-risk youth. Behind the marketing, many facilities have been criticised for abusive conditions, lack of oversight, and coercive practices like isolation, forced labour, and tough love discipline. Estimates of the number of young people placed in these facilities at any given time range from about 120,000 to 200,000, funded in part by $23 billion in taxpayer public funds. Survivors and advocates have pushed for stricter regulation and accountability, arguing the industry often causes more trauma than it heals.
Ellis, thank you. So all the kidnappings, the flashlights up backsides, solitary confinement, like, could we please set all that aside for a moment? What I'm curious to know is, does separating the problematic teen from the concerned parent result in desirable outcomes? And if the answer is yes, well then, how long? Like at Provo, a year was the default, which, remember, is like eternity in teen years. I mean, if the Grimace had told me I was going to be there for 3 months, you know, maybe I wouldn't have escaped. Which gets me thinking, like, my year, like, that was more of a sentence than treatment. I mean, if it was treatment, you know, what was the diagnosis? You know, out of control teen. Okay. But more importantly, like, how were we supposed to know when I was cured? And let's just say that I was cured within 3 months. A fully rehabilitated teen. I just don't see Provo, you know, letting me go and forgoing the extra 9 months of income. Which begs the question, like, you know, why the 1 year, one size fits all? I mean, we're all individuals, are we not? You know, teens and parents. But, you know, Provo, it's a for-profit school. You know, why present a monthly option when you can price by the year, you know, and then upsell if you can? You know, mesdames et messieurs, you know, enjoying your freedom from parenting? Well, we're happy to keep little Johnny locked up for another year, you know. You know where to send the check. And what I wouldn't give to be a fly on the wall or of the bank account of that Palo Alto therapist dude. Like, did he get a little spliffy spliff, like a little something-something kickback from the owners of Provo? Was everybody just traipsing gaily over the Stark Laws? It's difficult to say, you know. But economics, you know, 'tis a powerful and perverse force. But what if separating the teen from the parent does not result in the desired outcomes? I mean, what if kids inherit some of the traumas from their parents? And if so, how to cure a child without understanding the parent? And if so, does that mean the parent should go with the kids? I mean, imagine, like, father and son squatting side by side for the Grimace's flashlight. Imagine mother and son languishing side by side on the intake couch. Or imagine mother and daughter side by side, standing ips, perfect structure. Or imagine father and daughter side by side, munching on slices of cheese and fine red coats. But I mean, like, come on, like, would that be practical? Like, what parent could pause their life or their job, you know, or their careers, you know, to go live at a facility like Provo, you know, with their child? And if parents could, and if parents would, like, should the Grimace's key lock the parents' door as well? And then I think about pharmaceuticals. You know, like, during my time at Provo in the 80s, like, Daryl was the only kid I remember getting medicated. You know, how far we've come, you know? Seems like these days everyone's on drugs. It's as if it's the only thing kids and parents have in common. But in all seriousness, like, what do you do in the case of addiction? You know, is the teenage mind impervious to parenting? And then if so, does, like, the teenectomy have its place? So yeah, so many years after my tale of woe, I still have questions. And Provo and its ilk, you know, they're still operating, you know, some would say thriving. You know, I've learned that they've even got product extensions. You know, back in my day, it was called Provo Canyon School for Boys. But hey, you know, what about the ladies, you know? Let's not ignore the fairer sex. You know, that's 50% of the population. That's good business. You know, now we've got Provo Canyon School for Girls, too. I mean, imagine my surprise when I learned that, you know, the mighty Paris Hilton, like, her and I are unlucky alumni. Her personal story, yeah, I can relate. But I'm also, like, inspired by her activism. Like in December 2024, Congress passed the Stop Institutional Child Abuse Act, which Biden signed into law. Like, how rad is that? Like, dude, that's all Paris. Like, that is supremely hot. So, time for a sayonara. Thanks everybody for listening. You know, my hope is that my story in a small way can help shape an ending to the many sad stories currently unfolding, and those future stories yet to be written. An ending that's good for kids, good for parents, good for family, and good for friends, and good for the professionals who sincerely want to help. You know, an ending that just hasn't happened yet. But an ending that's better than good. A new beginning.